I'm Christopher Cruz. A closed section of busy Interstate 10 in downtown Los Angeles is partially reopening today and will be fully reopened for tomorrow morning's commute. Governor Gavin Newsom spoke to reporters today.
You can be assured of one thing: safety first, quality foundational in this effort. It wasn't just speed that we were after. We wanted to make sure this thing was safe. And after those safety inspections late last night and early this morning, we'll need about 8 or so hours once we all clear off, and we'll get this thing back and operational.
Police have released a photo of a man they say is connected to the arson fire that forced the closure of the section of the highway last week. CBS Los Angeles reporter Nicole Comstock.
He's described as a 6-foot-tall man in his 30s with black hair. He has a big knee brace on his right leg and burn injuries on his left leg.
Negotiators are cautiously optimistic that a deal will soon be reached to release at least some of the more than 240 hostages being held by Hamas.
U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor says there are some sticking points. Still,
we share the assessment that many areas of difference that previously existed have been narrowed, that we believe we are closer than we have been.
On CBS's Face the Nation, John Viner added, this is an extremely delicate situation.
The mantra that nothing is agreed until everything is agreed really does apply, and we do not yet have an agreement in place.
Viner also says the U.S. has cautioned Israel to protect Palestinian civilians in Gaza as it steps up combat operations. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
The huge Al-Shifa hospital complex in Gaza City is almost completely empty now, says the BBC's Mark Lowen in Jerusalem.
Gaza's largest hospital has been emptying, with hundreds sheltering there fleeing south. Among them are the premature babies left without incubators, now moved to Rafah to escape the war into which they were born.
The babies will eventually be moved to Egypt. Russia launched several waves of drone attacks on the Ukrainian capital Kyiv overnight for the second night in a row, stepping up its assaults on the city after several weeks of pause. Ukraine's Air Force said its air defense systems destroyed 15 of the 20 kamikaze drones over Kyiv and two nearby regions. The beginning of Thanksgiving week in the east will be rainy, and it will be a snowy holiday for some, says National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec.
The system that's going to be affecting the central, the eastern United States over the next several days, mostly rain. There is some potential for snow to begin as snow across northern New York State, northern New England.
Could also be some heavy rain. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform. You need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Of sharing gratitude is how Thanksgiving is described in the dictionary. But did you know the first official national holiday happened in 1789? It was declared by President George Washington following...
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Plans to expand part of Interstate 94 in Milwaukee are reigniting a debate over the environment. Mike Mohn has more on a new study that suggests narrower traffic lanes could lessen the environmental impact of new road projects.
Research from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health was more focused on urban roadways with speed limits of around 35 miles an hour. Dr. Shima Hamidi helped lead the study, which says switching from lane widths between 12 and 11 feet, long the norm, down to 9 feet helps reduce traffic collisions. She says it also leaves more room for options that don't involve vehicles.
It also will help many people to switch from driving to other modes of transportation, such as biking and walking, which could result in greenhouse gas emission reductions from transportation.
The study notes that with narrower lanes, people won't feel compelled to drive as fast and will be more alert. Hamidi says while this approach might slow traffic, past research shows minimal effects. That means these changes wouldn't cancel out environmental benefits. Hamidi also notes that transportation planners and engineers have expressed liability concerns, but she says her team's study is one of the first to give cities and states firm data on the traffic safety side, showing that skinnier lanes are more effective.
We are getting more and more interest from transportation planners, mostly at the local level. Cities are eager and interested to really see how this could be implemented.
Hamidi says the next steps involve more research to quantify some of the other impacts, including air pollution. The study issued this month analyzed nearly 1,200 streets in seven cities around the U.S. The findings come amid a gradual increase in pedestrian fatalities over the past decade. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunny skies this afternoon with a high of 51. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, 36. Tomorrow, high of 46. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 45 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda, and here is today's episode. Folks, welcome to the Cripescast. Today we have Dexter Patterson on. He is a UW professor, and he is also the co-founder of BIPOC Birding Club Wisconsin. It is a birding club dedicated to bringing everybody out into the woods to enjoy nature and the beautiful art of birding. Doesn't matter what your background is, but specifically geared toward representing people of color out in the woods and whatnot. And as a fellow bird nerd myself, it was just a pleasure to talk with Dexter. We got talking about, like, there's been a lot of crazy bird things happening in Wisconsin this past year. Colleen is here, everyone. And, you know, we're like, remember when the flamingos came in over Port Washington?
Yeah.
And then up in Green Bay, there was this, that spoonbill thing. I forget how you pronounce it, but roseate, I forget. But you know what? That's the cool thing about Dexter is if you mispronounce a bird or you forget the name of it or whatever, it's okay. It's like, it's all about just the joy of getting out there and the simple act of looking at a bird and going, oh yeah, that's a cool bird. That's it. That's the entry to birding.
He's not a snob like you are.
I'm not a snob.
One time I was at Home Goods and I FaceTimed because I saw this cool like art for his apartment, for Charlie's apartment.
Yeah.
And FaceTimed him and I was like, hey, do you want this? And it was like a couple ducks. And you were like,
no,
I don't want a basic duck is what you said.
No, you were showing me two mallards. Okay. And it's not that I didn't want a picture of two. I have several mallard pictures already. So what I was saying is for the money, I didn't, you know, I was like, let someone else have a mallard in their house. You know,
this is interesting how you're like marketing it now.
I'm backpedaling a bit.
Yeah. Cause you're like, if I were basic, I'd want a mallard. That's what you
is that what I said? Pull up the text.
On FaceTime.
Oh, so we can't prove it.
With a friend. They were with me and they overheard you.
I call that friend up.
Okay.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Well, it's a mallard, you know? Anyway,
you were like, if it were Merganser, I'd be talking.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, yeah.
You found me a because it's very rare to find that, you know? Yeah. So maybe I am a snob. Maybe Dexter's teaching me that you don't have to be a snob. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. I'm okay to admit I'm wrong.
Say that one more time and we'll isolate that audio.
Maybe underscore highlight. I am wrong.
Okay.
So anyway,
you got to nerd out with your bird friends.
Got to nerd out with a fell bird nerd. It was super cool.
I love that.
I love it for me too. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to talk with my buddy, Dexter Patterson. What is good, sir? Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Man, living the dream, Charlie. Living the dream.
Are you? That's good, dude. All right. What does the dream look like today?
Dream looks like today. You know, we had I'm full-time faculty member at the University of Wisconsin. So being able to teach those future leaders, those young adults, those badgers that's going to go out in the world and do incredible things. I just feel like, you know, that is the dream for me. So We had an amazing lecture this morning in my video intro to video production class. Just, I don't know. They feed me so much joy every day. I just feel like I'm super lucky to be able to do what I do. When you grow up, you have certain dreams and ultimately you want to do something that doesn't feel like work. Yeah. And as hard as I work, I feel like it doesn't feel like a job. You know, like I just feel like every day I show up, it's like I'm going birding every day or something. You know, they light me up. They fill me up with so much joy, you know, so.
That's living great, the dream. Man. That's cool. And I can't wait to get to the birding aspect of this interview in a second. But before we do, tell us about the classes that you teach at UW. Tell us like where you grew up and then kind of give us to how you got to the idea of starting, you know, the birding club.
Yeah. So right now I teach full time in the Department of Life Sciences Communication. So that's in the CALS department here on campus. And our focus is basically teaching people how to use digital tools to communicate science. So for me, I've always kind of been into science. I've always been into communication. I love people. So as I was thinking about what I wanted to do with my career, this really kind of spoke to me, where it was kind of like this blend. Growing up, they called me Digital Dex. I was that guy, like they were like, give him the camera, let him do this, let him do that. Oh, he can figure it out. He can build your MySpace page. Yes, I'm kind of old. So it's always kind of been, you know, that skill set. I've always kind of had that skill set. And for me now to be able to teach, so I teach intro to digital video production. I teach radio and podcasting for science communication. And then I teach documentary photography for the sciences. So it kind of blends all of, you know, what I feel like are my strengths as a creator, as a teacher, as well as gives me that opportunity to show people the opportunity they have to use these tools to tell some amazing stories in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you are. So you just decided to take the skills that you were literally teaching to do and almost lead by example for what is possible with these skills and by combining these things. And you've created this cool, in the way I see it, a platform to maybe bring in people who may not be, potentially interested or potentially given the avenue or potentially, you know, just given the opportunity, to bird. Or even think, yeah. First of all, most people out there are not birders, you know, and, you know, when you have a focus on, you know, BIPOC and kind of, and you bring that out and you just provide that opportunity, what was the response like and why did you decide to frame it the way you framed it?
So for me, like birding, you know, I always felt like I was kind of scared growing up, right? As a man of color, I was always afraid that like if I told people I was this bird nerd, I'd get picked on, right? Like live it, you know. So my people were like, Dex like birds, right? Like, and like now I'm like, yes, birds, but like there was this fear factor, and for me. It was also, Charlie, it was like this, I never saw people that look like me birding, right? Yeah. So like in these traditional spaces, you know, they're older people, older white dudes usually, yeah. Right?
With the funny ass hats and big and boots, like, you know?
Yeah. And I got them all too now, which is kind of funny, but I wear them with a little different type of swag, you feel
yeah,
me?
Yeah, right, right.
But it was this opportunity where I was like, I don't see people like me out here, and I feel like representation matters. So I was like, as I'm out birding and like, this was especially true during the pandemic. I noticed like, and maybe you can relate to this, like the lack of human interaction was like really doing something to me. And, you know, being cooped up and I was like, I got to get outside, right? Like, and that's when I really start to see the power. And I always tell people birding is not about the birds. And the reason why I say that is I started to notice that my mental health was getting better. My physical health was getting better. You know, I'm hiking some days hours at a time, right? And you don't even notice it. So I started feeling better about myself. And I was like, I'm freaking happy. So like when I'm out there and I'm like, I call it bird joy, right? And I'm like, I see something new and I like get all excited and kind of get all giddy, right? And I was like, dude, I got to share this with more people. So I started thinking about, you know, I mentioned having these skills, you know, knowing social media well, knowing how to use video, audio, all these different things. And I started saying, you know what? I want to start sharing these moments in real time with people so they can see that birding is for them, right? And that was kind of like my spark of like, if this makes me feel this good, if I can get one other person to like go out and maybe they feel a little bit better, or maybe they realize, oh man, I've never been to this natural area. You know, what that was one thing. I was like, there are all these beautiful places around me and I've never been to them before, whether it's our amazing parks, these nature conservancies and wetlands and all these beautiful places. And I'm like, they've been in my backyard the whole time and I'm like, not there, right? Like, and yeah. It was just like, it opened up a world for me where I was like, wow, like, not only do I want to share what this makes me feel like, but I want to share that, like, it's bigger than the birds, man. The state of Wisconsin is just absolutely beautiful. And I was like, let's get more people outside.
Yeah. And I especially think, you know, as sort of technology has brought a lot of us inside or to the point where we really don't need to leave, you know, someone brings us our food with Instacart, you know, or we, if we go to the grocery store, we even check out, we don't go to the cashier. We miss these little human interactions. But then beyond that, like when we're out, like, it's almost like from a mental health perspective, God gave us a pretty solid antidepressant, and that is like nature. And I'm not saying that from a hippie perspective as much as I'm saying it from a scientific perspective. The ability, nature, and being in some sense of nature for a certain amount of time drops cortisol levels, reduces stress. That over time reduces like the health care we are all paying, you know, into a system. So having these natural spaces is something that is good for is so much more than just people who love nature. It's good for the economy. It's good for people's mental well-being. I mean, it's just, can we find a way to convince enough people who can do building developments on them before they do the developments, you know? That's me on a tangent right there. But I think what you're doing is super cool, and I love how you're finding maybe a group of folks who hasn't been historically had access to such cool nature, you know, just nature in general, and then introducing that, because we found a way as a society to kind of take it away in a lot of ways.
That's what we want to do, is we kind of want to break that cycle, you know, and show, I mean, there was a long time in this country where Black people weren't even welcome to our national parks, right? And I think a lot of people don't associate that with why maybe they don't want to go to a park, right? Like, it's kind of like over the years, you talk about family vacations and where you may go. A lot of times it's not a national park. And hopefully that starts to change for some folks, you know, but there's also fear factors for many people of color going into the woods, right? A lot of people fear what they don't understand. You got a history of lynching, and like, it's a really deep history of why there are so many reasons why a lot of people of color avoid nature, avoid the woods and different things. And it's beyond that it's not beautiful, right? Like, it is gorgeous. And once people get out there, they're like, holy cow, it does open up your mind. Whether, you know, forest bathing is real, right? You talked about the cortisol levels and different things. Research, as a scientist, right? There is research out there that proves that hearing bird calls and sounds bring down anxiety. There's like a whole movement of mindful birding that's going on in the world right now because of that link. And I can't tell you enough, I'm having a rough day I take a hike on Picnic Point Charlie on here on campus or something. Yeah. I come back and I'm like, oh, like it's tangible, it's palpable. So I want people to understand it's for you. I always tell birding, I always tell my members, birding is for everyone, even you. If you've never been there, at least try it. And that's the reason I kind of take this low key, you know, slightly scientific approach to it, right? Because I feel like a lot of times it could be super intimidating. Mm-hmm. It could be like a lot of these traditional birding spaces, you go there, they expect you to have all the answers. Like if you ask a question and maybe it's a silly question, like, what is that bird? And it's an American robin and they make you feel like you're dumb, right? Maybe you don't know, right?
Right.
Like, and that's, like, maybe you don't know that's a black-capped chickadee. Maybe you don't know that's a downy woodpecker or a hairy woodpecker or a dark-eyed junco, right? All birds you can see right now. So like, it's one of those things where like, we're always like, I always tell people, you don't need to be a pro. We go on hikes, sometimes we can have 40, 50 people that show up and half of them have never been birding before. Guess what I tell them? If you point at a bird, you're being helpful.
Yeah.
And guess what that does for them? They, right? Like it, they're not afraid to ask a question, right?
Right.
They just kind of live in a moment. They're present. They're learning along the way and they feel like, hey, I can do this, right? We have kids, parents will bring their kids and I'm like, please let your kids run. Let them roll in the grass, let them pick flowers, right? Like that's how you get them interesting. That's also like this tangent of birding isn't about the birds. It's about getting outside. It's about community, right? There's so many different levels and I'll like, hey, break out the Seek app, right? S-E-E-K. Learn that plant, right? And learn these different things. Some people just love hiking and the birds are the bonus. And I'm like, that is amazing, right? Like,
right.
Come for the hike. It doesn't matter. You're outside.
Man, I remember when Pokemon Go became a thing, you know, and everyone's going out there with their phone. And I mean, hey, it gets them outside, whatever. But I mean, like, birding is the original Pokemon Go, you know?
It
like,
is.
You can, like... You can see like a lot of cool birds if you just look. And you brought up apps too. The Merlin app, I brought it up on, dang, it's cool. For those of you who don't know, I think I brought it up on this show before. Merlin is a cool app where you just open it up. I think it's Cornell researchers. And you can have it listen to what's going on around. It'll hear bird noises. It'll tell you what bird's there. And then you can start looking for where that bird might be. I mean, it's cool, man. I love it.
You know, imagine sitting outside on your porch. You don't have no clue what you're hearing, right? People always hear these little chirps. You open up the Merlin app, and next thing you know, and then the picture pops up. And then you're like, oh, that's what that is, right?
Yeah.
It's like these light bulb moments that kind of happen. That is so cool to me, right? And I always say... They're always like, Dexter, how do you know all these birds? I say, one bird, one call at a time. Like 100%. Literally, like that's it. That is literally it. One bird, one call at a time. And just take that pressure off yourself. You don't need to be a pro. You just don't need to be a pro. If you're paying attention, I tell people be like, well, what makes me a birder? I said, are you paying attention to birds? You're a birder.
Yeah.
You don't need a camera. You don't need binoculars. You don't need fancy equipment. All you need to do is just pick up your head and pay attention and you're birding.
Right. Right. It's very, very low, low barrier to entry to do it. And it's just such a fun thing. Like I remember this one time I was out with that little app on my phone and I saw in there that there was woodpeckers. Mm. And, you know, I read it wasn't a red-bellied woodpecker. I used to think it was a red-bellied woodpecker. And this is kind of a good explanation for how I love birding and I still mess this stuff up all the time. And maybe you can help me. So it's the little woodpecker with the, black and white feathers, the white belly, the red little mohawk on the head. It's a small one.
So
it's about a little more than a hand in size.
Yeah. So that, what that is the downy woodpecker.
The downy woodpecker. I knew it was laundry. I always think laundry. That's an easy one for a lot of like people to remember, and I screw it up, you know. But man, I saw it on the app, and I looked up. I was like, "Where is that sucker?" And I looked up. It wasn't just one. It was like a whole family of these woodpeckers. And they were like going into this hollowed out piece of wood in one side, and they were going out the other and then flying around to the other side. They were just playing game with this hollowed out piece of wood in the tree. And it was just so fun. I just sat there and watched it, you know, for a minute. But it's a great entertainment. And if you got binoculars, which you don't need to have, but if you got them, man, you can get pretty tight on those things. It's cool.
Hey, another fun fact, that little red stripe that you see, that's how you know it's a male.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of times So can you explain this for folks? Why is it the male birds are often the coolest in color, and then the female birds may have some more like subdued colors?
Because guess who controls yes or no in the breeding process? The female, ladies. Right?
Yeah.
So the male, they're going to try to look as fancy and as bright as possible. Like, hey, look at me. You should mate with me. Not this one over here. My mohawk is a little redder than that dude. You know what I mean? Like, hey. So wood ducks are a great example of that, right? Yeah. The male wood duck is the most colorful duck in North America. Beautiful, beautiful ducks, right?
Oh, God.
Just so beautiful. And the way that they established that color was over time, the female wood duck, who is absolutely gorgeous in her own right as well, she tries to find the most bold, bright, most beautiful colored male to mate with. Because what that tells her is this is going to give me healthy offspring. So over generations of the female selecting only the brightest, you know, healthiest looking males, it has created this lineage, right? This DNA of these just gorgeous male wood ducks because of the female. So the males look fancy and colorful thanks to their female partner.
And is it also true that the females are more of the earth tone colors? So when they're protecting the nest, hawks, it's kind of a camouflage.
It is. It's nature's camouflage as well. Cause a lot of time, and there are a lot of birds that both spend times on the nest, but most of the time it's the female birds, and it does help give them more camouflage, especially during the nesting season.
What bird got you into birding? Like what was it?
Do you look? You see this little dude right here? So this is the osprey. Right?
Oh yeah, up the north, osprey, man.
Yeah, the osprey did it for me. And this is what I would call my spark bird. So if you hear somebody talking about a spark bird, it's that bird that lit that fuse, right? That sparked them and really made them want to learn more. And for me, it was the osprey. And at the time, this is over a decade ago. I come across, this is kind of right when social media videos are kind of taking off, and I have always been interested in the space, and I'm scrolling, and all of a sudden I see this bird. I, at the time, Charlie, I didn't know what I was looking at, right? I had no clue. This is an osprey. All I see is this big old bird. And I'm like, what is this thing? Right. And at the time, this bird is just darting down towards the water. And I remember just being like, what is this? You know, what is happening right here, right? So I'm like that little emoji where your head's blowing up.
Yeah.
Like I'm literally like that. I'm just like staring at this bird and I'm like, what is happening right now? Why is it going so fast? And why is it flying towards the water?
Yeah.
Right? And it's just going, it's going, it's going, and it's getting closer and closer. And I start getting a little anxious because I'm like, this bird getting really close to the water, going head first this fast, and I'm starting to get a little anxious, like what is happening here. And then all of a sudden it locks out its big old talons. I mean, if you see an osprey, they have the most gnarly looking talons ever. I mean, they are just long, they're curved, you don't want to be on the business side of that. So they lock in the talons. And then all of a sudden it hits the water. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, again, that emoji, my head's blowing up. And I'm freaking out because I'm like, this bird's going to drown. Like, I'm like, all these thoughts going through my head. I'm like, this freaking bird is going to drown.
It's putting itself out of misery.
Yeah, I was like, what is happening? You know, and so I just keep watching and I'm watching. And I'm like, why am I watching this? I started questioning myself too.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, his head pops out of the water. And I'm like, it didn't drown. Right? Like, it didn't drown. It starts shaking his head a little bit. Birds hate to be wet, by the way. But next thing you know, it starts flapping its wings, And it comes out of the water with a big ass fish. I'm talking about, it's on here. Like, this is literally the spark bird moment where the osprey comes out of the water and just flies away with this huge trout. I was done. Like, literally that day, I said, first of all, what was that? So I started researching. I started trying to figure out what this bird is. I said, I need to know what that bird is. And I was like, I didn't even know what else. All these other birds. Like, it was that moment where I was like, that bird made me want to know as much about all birds as possible. And then as I started researching, I realized that ospreys actually are in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. I can actually see this bird near me? Right? I started freaking out, dude. Like, I was like, that's it. Like, that was the moment where I said, I need to know. Like, I was like, I'm a bird nerd. That day forward, I was like on a mission, like literally on a mission. And that was the moment, man.
That's super cool. I love that. So I remember I was fishing up north this past year and I saw one of those ospreys go down and come up. First of all, I'm sitting there fishing walleyes and I've been fishing walleyes. And I've been fishing the walleyes deep in the depths, you know, over a hump, because there's a hump down there and they usually wait for the feed to go down the hump. And so I'm fishing on the bottom, dragging a leech or something or shooting like a rattling bait over there. And then all of a sudden I see this osprey go down and come up with a walleye. And it was toward the surface. I was like, I didn't think the walleyes were toward, you know, and it wasn't like a wounded one or either. I would have seen it flapping, but it was like right in front of my boat too. So wow. I was just amazed by their fishing capabilities, you know, and to see one come up with that, because a walleye is a big fish, man. It's like that trout on your hat, you know?
Yeah. And it's like an explosion. You remember when it hit the water, it's like, boom, right? And then like all of a sudden they're gonna come out of the water like it's nothing and just fly away.
Yeah, they don't need bait to catch fish, you know? They're just no. I mean, they're so just impressive.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Real progress has been made in negotiations for the release of hostages being held by Hamas. Deputy National Security Advisor John Finer on ABC.
There has been a significant progress, including in recent days, in recent hours. Some of the issues where there was disagreement have now been either narrowed or an understanding has been reached.
A section of I-10 in downtown Los Angeles will reopen in time for tomorrow morning's commute. Mayor Karen Bass.
The White House made it clear from day one that they were going to do whatever it took in order to get Angelenos safe and life back to normal.
The highway was closed after an arson fire last week. A SpaceX rocket and capsule exploded shortly after launch yesterday, but the company is not fretting, says CBS's Mark Strassman.
I would definitely classify this as a success.
Former astronaut Garrett Reisman is a SpaceX advisor.
Now they know what the next set of problems are, and I'm optimistic that they'll go and fix those.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Badgers win an
overtime. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Nebraska jumped out to a 14-point lead in the first half, but the Wisconsin Badgers battled back to send the game into overtime and get the win, 24-17. Braylon Allen with a 3-yard run to score the winning touchdown, ending a 3-game losing streak. Badgers head coach Luke Fickle.
Well, winning's a whole different feeling, so... I wasn't kidding. I mean, you guys have seen me the last couple weeks. You've seen me on the Monday press conferences, and it's been a stretch, you know, on all of us. I think, you know, every kid in that locker room, every coach in our program, and to get a win tonight, it's so great. I mean, it's just, it's deep. It's deep.
Wisconsin travels to Minnesota next week. NBA, the Bucks with a 132-125 win over the Mavericks. Milwaukee scoring in 7 of their last 9 possessions to get the win in the fourth quarter. Adrian Griffin.
You know, your fourth quarter got to be your best quarter, especially when you're playing a terrific team like Dallas.
That's Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunny skies this afternoon with a high of 51. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, 36. Tomorrow, high of 46. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 46 degrees.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
This is Mean Gene Okerlund, and I'm talking with Brett Uhlberg, owner of Robert Hack Diamonds. Brett, I hear you pay cash for gold.
Not only gold, but silver, diamonds in any form like jewelry, teeth, coins, flatware.
Why should I sell you my gold?
Why not? Our store is the only store that recommends you shop around before you sell. This way you know you're getting the most money. But if Robert Hack Diamonds can't beat a competitor's offer on your scrap gold, we'll give you $20 just for letting us try.
Hey, what if I'm shy?
You? Well, at Robert Hack Diamonds, we sit with you at a table. We go through your items and make you an offer. You're not pressured, and we offer more on jewelry that we can resell.
Can I trade my gold for a new piece of jewelry?
Of course you can, and not only that, we can custom make a piece of jewelry using your gold and gems.
Hey, there you have it, folks. Sell your gold to my friends at Robert Hack Diamonds. Visit them on 76th and Layton in Greenfield. Robert Hack Diamonds, where they want your business.
You probably heard the quote, friends are family you choose. It's also the idea behind the other Thanksgiving holiday, Friendsgiving. Some credit shows like Friends for starting this trend by featuring a day meant to celebrate with those who aren't your relatives. And when to gather is up to you. Many celebrate just before Thanksgiving, while others wait until after the official holiday. However you celebrate, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Hey, folks, I'm Charlie Behrens. You are listening to the Cripescast on Civic Media, and this is my conversation with fellow birding nut, Dexter Patterson. I remember the bird, what'd you call that, the spark bird?
Yeah.
My spark bird, and I also talked about on this podcast before, but the red-breasted merganser. Mm. Oh my gosh, you know that bird?
Oh yeah, they're beautiful.
So beautiful. They got this, and I grew up, you know, I did duck hunting. I did all that sort of stuff. I was familiar with teals and wood ducks and this, that, and the other thing, but I had never heard about these red-breasted mergansers. I was just walking along the river in Milwaukee, and I see this duck with a mohawk. And I'm like, What, that dude, like, did he accidentally get clipped by a boat propeller, get like a haircut or something? Is that like a wood duck with a haircut? No, man, that the red-breasted merganser. And you talk about the male-female interaction, you know, the one female is swimming around there, got five different males doing the courtship dance. ass up, beak up. You know, that's the way they like to do something that rhymes with up. And and then the female just sticks her razor sharp beak right into one of their sides, and that's the one she wants to get freaky with. And it's just such a cool thing. And that's the bird that made me buy binoculars right there. That's what.
Yeah, because those displays, right? When they like get up, the and they're nuts. Like,
yeah,
it's intense.
They're crazy. They don't leave those female ducks alone, man. The whole reason they eat fish is so they can spend all day following around those lady ducks. You know, I sometimes see a few female red-breasted mergansers just going by themselves. I just have to imagine they're talking so much smack about like how those guys won't leave them alone, man. You know.
Yeah, he's like, oh boy over there. He just
No, it's tough.
He's not ready for this.
He's not ready for these red breasts, you know? Which are not even why do they call it the red breasted merganser? Isn't there some little
piece
of red, so, but only on the males, yeah?
Yeah, and it's during the breeding season, you really kind of see that red breast, especially when they start doing those displays, kind of similar to when the loons kind of open up their breasts like that. But during that breeding season, you really see that red breast pop.
Man, loons are they're cool too. I remember this one time that I was kayaking like way up north. My family used to go up north every year, and I was just sitting there early in the morning. Big family, one of the babies was up, so I got out in the kayak or the canoe at that point, and I was just going out there sitting in this bay. And then all of a sudden, all these loons came flying in, baby loons, the whole deal. I guess I don't know how the babies got there because I didn't think they fly. No, they came popping up out of the water. They popped up out of the water. That's it. And they were just surrounding me. I was just there. And then all of a sudden I made a few movements. They didn't care initially, and then they all went under again. But man, those are such cool birds. And I think you start to realize, you know, I don't see these often. You know, and then why isn't that? And then you look at sort of the habitat loss. And currently, right now, just as a society, birds, we're learning about how much benefit they bring to us. And yet at the same time, there's a songbird shortage. You know, I mean, we are losing our birds at an incredible rate because of climate change, because of habitat loss. How much of that stuff are you concerned about? How much advocacy do you feel like you're doing? And is the simple act of birding advocacy?
It is, because when you start birding and you start paying attention, you also start to notice habitat, right? Mm-hmm. Or during spring migration, and you mentioned the songbirds and all the little warblers start coming back, right? And they're so beautiful. And you start, when you pay attention, you're like, this exists, right? Like, especially when you're new. Like, I can't imagine like the feeling when you see some of these birds for the first time. It's kind of magical in a sense of like, you just didn't know it existed. It's like this portal into these worlds, right? And you start to realize, wow, we start chopping down all these trees. We're chopping down habitat. We're chopping down nesting areas. We're chopping down food sources. You mentioned the loons. Loons are very particular when it comes to water quality. Right. Not only do they need a big space of water because they need a runway to take off, but they only stop in pristine waters. So if your waters are polluted, the loons are not going to stop. They're not going to be able to fish. They're not going to be able to feed themselves as they're making their way north during the breeding season. Or right now, they're all over Lake Mendota, because they're making pit stops before they go to their wintering grounds. Right. And they stop here. We're lucky we're on the isthmus here on the UW campus, and our lakes are doing good right now. So the loons are doing fine. The waterfowl here are doing fine. But when we think of water quality and we start to ruin that, that's also ruining your fishing. If your fishing is bad, guess what's going to happen? You're not going to see the other apex predators. You're not going to see the osprey. You're not going to see the bald eagles. You're not going to see a lot of these other things. Like it literally is that circle of life, where if one thing in an ecosystem is wrong, it knocks out everything out of order. I know last winter, there was a huge ice storm down south. I don't know if you remember, like Texas, just getting buried in ice. all those southern states getting buried in ice, and we lost millions of songbirds, millions, right? And you noticed it. You noticed it in the spring where the numbers were low. Thankfully, this spring we saw numbers that were more reflective. We saw some changes, but that the spring before was just awful. I mean, and it was a direct reflection of those birds literally dying off in a snow and in ice and snowstorms as they're in their wintering ground. So it all matters. All the habitat matters. It literally is the symbiotic relationship between all these different parts of the ecosystem. And once we, and it's usually us as human beings, mess up one of them, it impacts all of them.
It does. I mean, this year, and I don't know how much this can be directly attributed to climate change, but we saw a few very rare birds make their way up to Wisconsin. We saw flamingos in Sheboygan, for God's sake. What was up with that? Why did the flamingos come here? Was it like the first time they've been here? Have we seen this before? And then why did they come up this way?
Yeah, so the flamingos were actually knocked. They were spread. They were literally spread all over the country from the hurricane.
Okay.
So the hurricane actually just, they were trying to survive. So they were running from the hurricane. And that literally, when they made it up to Port Washington, that was the first ever state recorded record in the history of our state of American flamingo. So it was literally a miracle. It's something that had never happened before. When I got that notification, like, dude, I was like,
you got your car
out of here. I'm out of here. It's like one of those moments. Like, I'm not like a bird chaser, and I always tell people this, but like, if it's like these rare birds you mentioned, the American flamingos, I'm going to try to see that.
Yeah.
We had a roseate spoonbill that showed up in Green Bay.
I'm going to see that. Yeah. Well, that's another cool one. So tell people about that and then why you think it got to Green Bay.
Yeah. So a lot of these birds, they're typically younger birds. And it could be a storm. It could be them just getting lost. So one thing about Wisconsin, we're on the Mississippi Flyway. So there is a chance that a bird can get knocked off course, could be a younger bird, not as experienced, right? And maybe, so down south, you can see them in Florida. You can see them in Georgia, off the coast of Georgia, Little St. Simon's Island, places like that in large numbers. And they typically hang out with great egrets, you know, great blue herons, which are birds that we get quite often here, right? They're a regular that we see here all the time in Wisconsin. So maybe this one bird gets knocked off course and then he's like flying around. He's like, hey, there goes some egrets. They're my people, right? And he's like, I'm gonna go hang out with my people. Cause he knows if he sees them, guess what? There's food sources for him. Like, they're, you know, and they're usually, they're very social birds and you'll see them in larger numbers hanging out together. So maybe that getting knocked off course a little bit gets to hanging out with these birds, and then he continues flying north with them because now he's with them, right? And kind of going through the migration pattern. But it's typically, it's going to be an accident, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not a, I always tell people vagrant appearances of birds happen all the time in all parts of the world. The one thing that we need to pay attention to are patterns. Okay. So now if he comes back next year and another year and another, now let's start thinking about what is happening here. These ranges of these birds are changing, right?
Yeah.
The limpkin is a really good example too. Last summer was the hot limpkin summer. This summer it was even hotter, right? We had all these limpkin sightings all over in these places that limpkins aren't supposed to be. And Wisconsin was one of the places and people are freaking out. Hot limpkin summer. This summer, even more sightings of limpkins. We actually still have one hanging out in Mount Horeb right now at Stewart County Park. Like, the dude is still here.
Really?
Eating all the big apple snails and just loving his, he's loving his life right now.
He's probably, you know? Like, I mean, it's 60 degrees. I mean, why leave, right? You know?
Yeah, so it's kind of wild. So they happen, and I always tell people that is okay. These birds are smart, right? Flamingos, everybody's worried about them. Oh, are they going to stick around for the cold? No, they're not. They're smart. They're going to get up and they're going to go. And there have not been any flamingo sightings in the state of Wisconsin for a month.
Right.
So like, they're gone. And all these birds eventually their instincts will kick in. They want to survive, right? Like, and they're going to get it. They're going to see other birds taking off. They're going to notice the water is starting to freeze, and they're going to start freezing their tails off as well, right? Yeah. So like, they kind of, they'll figure it out. Now, just tell people, don't worry unless it starts to become a pattern, and then we can have a different conversation. The American white pelican is another great example, right? You think 20 years ago, nobody's really seeing pelicans in Wisconsin. Just not happening. Now, every year, they breed here now. They're coming up in large numbers. You see them all over the state. So,
unlike Winnebago, sorry to cut you off, but there's this entire island that is just white from pelican crap. You know, it's acidified. It's gone. It's just a white island now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're here now. And like, they literally migrate up and they nest here now. And that wasn't something that you saw, you know, two decades ago. So it changes.
And do you think that is attributed to a change in climate? Is that basically what that is?
I think so. I think it's both. I think it's definitely habitat loss. It usually starts there, right? It's usually the habitat loss. It's developments. It's the draining of small lakes and ponds and these wetlands, right? They're building condos on them. They're doing all these, you know, all these different things to habitat. So it usually starts with habitat loss. And then the change of climate as well. I mean, like you just mentioned, it's 60 degrees in Wisconsin and it's November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these, we're living there, you know, it's the hottest. It's hottest it's ever been really now. And we're seeing that. So not only is it habitat loss, but it's also change of climate. And, you know, birds want food. And ultimately, if they're going to continue to expand range, they're usually expanding the range because they have to. And there's good food sources.
You know, and I think it's interesting if on a very micro level, if people watch the birds on a given day, you know when a storm is coming because the birds do different things when a storm's coming. So, you know, if you get into birding and you're watching birds over time on a macro level, you see the birds start doing something different, you know, something's coming, you know, it's these more of these hints that, you know, nature kind of gives you. It's like nature, if we pay attention to it long enough, tells us how to act as humans. But, you know, that's why I think it's so cool. The things that you do is connecting as many people as possible to nature. You know, it's something that we all don't do enough of. And it's cool to find different opportunities to do more of it. What do you see? Like, you just started this social media. When did you start making the videos and everything? And where do you want to take it?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I didn't know what I wanted to do at one point. I was just kind of like, all right. Where's the learning opportunity? How can I get more people interested in these little creatures, right? And I was like, okay, what can I do? And I felt like I had this unique ability to tell some stories, to, you know, include some interesting nuggets. So I just started creating some content, whether I'm singing, rapping, dancing in the woods. Then I would start like helping people like, hey, who wants to help me find this bird or who wants to help me find that bird? And I honestly just started listening to the people and started paying attention. Okay, they like this, they want more of this. So I started leaning into more of that. And I was like, this is it. You ready? Let's go. Right? This is it. Like, let's go. Let's go on these birding adventures. And I started getting these messages, Charlie, from disabled people, from bedridden people, from people not in Wisconsin, and saying, dude, I love going birding with you. So it was like this accessibility factor that kind of really lit me up where I was like, okay, there's something here. There is something here. And then people started saying, I see myself in you, you know, like they're like, dude, you don't look like what I think a birder looks like. And then I would say birding is for everyone. You know what I mean? And like, I kind of want, and I was like, trying to make it cool, you know, birding cool. You know, my daughters would probably say, dad, you're not cool, you know. but really trying to like turn it on its head a little bit. And I always feel like there's more people like me that just want, maybe didn't know everything, or more people out there in the world that don't know that something is for them. that haven't realized that there are beautiful parks out there and they're for you. There are all these protected resources and natural areas that are out there and they're for you. And there's a lot more people in that bucket than the experts. So yeah. I started saying, all right, I feel like I can reach the masses, right? And start to like market birding to these people that may have never thought about it ever before. And that was it. That was kind of like the motivation, and then just kind of plugging away and finding something that works and trying to make sure that I'm offering value, but I'm also still staying true to Dexter, right? And having some fun, nerding out in the woods, you know, just being a bird nerd and just, you know, doing it my own way, you know? And I feel like that was the calling of like, you know what? I'm not going to do it like everybody else. I'm not going to tell you to be quiet in the woods when you go birding with me. I'm going to clap. We're going to celebrate when we see something new. We're going to get excited, right? And we're going to laugh and we're going to have fun and like show people it doesn't need to be so stuffy. It should be fun. Right. It should be joyful. Because if it's fun and it's joyful, you start to care. And if you start to care, right, you start to care about not only the bird, but where they live, you know, what habitats. And that's what it's just this whole symbiotic relationship. And that was it, man. And like, honestly, that's the driving force, as well as getting more people of color, more people from underrepresented groups outside together with allies, with people that want a more diverse, equitable outdoor experience in the state of Wisconsin, because it is so beautiful, you know? And like, the more people we can get outside, I just feel like the more we can protect this beautiful state that we have.
And it's cool that, you know, birding, for as much, you know, guff as, you know, we can give, like, being right here on your phone as opposed to out there, but right here on your phone, that's sort of where you got that inspiration, you know, that's where you got your initial hit with that osprey. And so it makes sense that you go right here to give other people that hit, you know, because you're meeting people right where they are. Everyone's right here. And then this is sort of your door. And then you show them the window, and we can walk out of that window, you know, or just the back door, I suppose. You go in their front door, take them out the back door into the yard. Maybe that's a better analogy, but it's super, super cool, man. And, you know, birding kind of is going through maybe this bit of a renaissance right now. Even John Oliver, did you see John Oliver's latest episode, Save the Bird? So, how do you say the name of that bird again? Pudetiteki. The Pudetiteki. I can't even say it right. So John Oliver, you know, decided that this was the bird that he wanted to win New Zealand's
Bird of the Year,
Bird of the Century. and then he chose Manitowoc, Wisconsin as one of the cities where he would buy a billboard pushing this bird through, you know. And it's such a cool thing. I think he kind of threw the whole campaign a little bit off kilter. I think he really opened the lid for the however you say it, and I should know. But did you see that billboard in Manitowoc at all?
I did not. I heard about it though.
Yeah, but I think things like that, it's really cool because you know, it just draws more awareness for these rare birds. And even though they're in maybe in a different place, their health is indicative of the health of birds throughout the world. So it's a different element of, you know, kind of what you're doing, raising awareness and all that. Well, this has been super fun, man. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you wish I would have?
No, you know, I want people to understand. People always ask me, you know, if I never went birding.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Discover the secret to a healthier you at Lake County Botanics. Vape Walkie specializes in top-quality hemp products from CBD to Delta 8, all curated just for you. You'll find Delta 8, Delta 10, THCA, and more legal hemp compounds in disposable vapes, cartridges, edibles, and more. Isolates, broad-spectrum, or full-spectrum CBD, they've got it all. They even have products for your furry friend. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 to 7, and Sundays from 11 to 5. Mention this ad to get a free gummy at 215 Oakton Avenue, Suite C in Pewaukee. LakeCountyBotanics.com.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Negotiators are closer to an agreement to free at least